Chapter 7.
Everyone is going to be so excited to see you,
Chief Red Squirrel whispered as we made our way through the woods.
I'm sure they'll demonstrate any craft or skills you'd like to see. The invaders may have taken away our land and our freedom, but they cannot take away what we teach to our children.
If you really don't know, we can teach you how to forage in the woods, Black Turtle said. Auntie Chickadee shows us a new plant every time we go out with her.
That's a mulberry tree, Little Bear pointed to a bushy, spreading tree with teardrop-shaped leaves and what looked like long, wrinkly blackberries dangling from its branches. The chubby teen reached up, grabbed a handful of berries from the tree, and tossed a few into his mouth, then held out his berry-stained hand to us.
Try some. They're sweet.
I always thought mulberry trees were what animals chased each other around in nursery rhymes. I tried one of the berries and grinned as the intensely sweet taste burst over my tongue. I almost felt like I was eating a vaguely berry-flavored gummy candy instead of the tartness I'd expected from a wild fruit.
Wow, that's sugary.
Little Bear let out a quiet gasp as Floppy reached down into his hand, scooped up a few berries with his trunk, and popped them into his triangular mouth. The teenager reached up slowly with his free hand, laid his hand on Floppy's trunk, and started to pet the little mammoth as he chewed.
I can harvest some saplings and replant them inside our territory.
Fila sniffed at the berry she'd plucked from the boy's hand, then curled her tongue around the black fruit and pulled it into her mouth.
They look a little like the berries that Dave Meyer ate, even if they taste nothing alike.
Mulberries are good, but let me show you something even better.
A steely-eyed woman with one long salt-and-pepper braid running down her back and a Han Solo-style leather vest over a short white tunic crouched down to the ground, pointed to a foot-wide patch of bare ground that rose up from the grass in a hump, and used the blunt side of her gray stone knife to scrape the top layer of dirt away. Within a few seconds, she'd uncovered a cache of little brown, round things in the ground. She scooped up a handful, showed them to us, and then peeled back the brown skin on one of the beans to show us a fat, white, curved bean. She reached inside her vest with her other hand, dropped a few big chunks of beef jerky into the hole she'd left, and then brushed dirt back over the hole.
These are mouse beans. The mice hide them to feed their families, so when we take some to plant, we always leave the same amount of food that we take. They grow underground, and the plant helps feed the soil.
But do you remember the song we sing to thank the mice, Shining Waters?
A short-haired woman with an axe asked her friend with a grin.
Don't sing it, Sweetgrass,
Shining Waters cautioned her friend. She brushed the dirt back over the mouse's cache, stood up, and offered the beans to us.
We should be a little quieter in case more eagle warriors are nearby. But now you know how to find beans in the winter.
Oh, thank you, dear.
Emma scooped a few of the beans up and popped them into her pocket.
These will be quite useful. I imagine they're very nourishing.
We really appreciate that you're showing us all this stuff, I said. But the problem is that we can't count on the worlds we'll be traveling through to have the same kind of plants and animals as this world. We really want to learn how you farm in your village with the seeds that you already have. The mouse beans will be great for planting, but we might not ever be able to use tricks like that.
There will be other creatures that hide their food in the ground,
Phyllis said. But that's kind of why we want to learn what you can do in your village, I said. We're not even asking for seeds if you can't spare them, just techniques.
Yes, I've got plenty of dried seeds of my own back in our house,
Emma said. She patted her pocket.
Although, I've never tried to plant mouse beans before. These will be an interesting treat.
We're getting close to the village,
cautioned the woman who'd stabbed Yodel in the back.
Voices down. We don't know if the Eagle Lord or any of his warriors are in the village after what happened last night.
Let me run ahead and check, Black Turtle offered. If the Eagle Warriors are there, they'll be less likely to notice some kid coming out of the woods than just about anyone else.
Except for Little Bear,
Chief Red Squirrel said.
Auntie, I can't run as fast as Black Turtle,
Little Bear protested. The chubby kid's free hand had disappeared behind Floppy's ear, and the little mammoth's hairy trunk was wrapped around his waist.
Anyway, I'm coming down Floppy. He likes me.
He does like you,
Phyla said as she scratched behind Floppy's other ear.
He tends to like people who offer him food.
I'll go,
Striped Falcon offered. But Black Turtle took off running before she could finish her sentence. The skinny woman sighed.
I'll go and watch to make sure he doesn't get killed, shall I?
Please,
Chief Red Squirrel said.
I'd rather he not go alone.
Striped Falcon shot off through the woods like a human cheetah, and before long she and Black Turtle were lost among the greenery.
There's only one thing we can't show you to farm, and it's rice,
Sweetgrass said.
We don't have enough room or water in the village for that. We used to grow rice in the swamps and ponds north of here. When we came here to hunt in the late summer, the women and children would go to the swamps every few days, take their canoes, and knock the ripe seed heads into the boat with sticks. They would tie together some of the unripe seed heads to keep them for the last harvest when the snow started to fly and we would leave.
The invaders ruined our crops,
said the woman who'd stabbed Yodel.
Weasel teeth, they just showed us another way,
Chief Red Squirrel began.
You are used to speaking with the invaders' words,
Weasel Teeth said, and then she bowed her head before the chief.
I do not mean to interrupt out of disrespect, but I do not hear any eagle warriors around, and we all agree with what I know is in your heart. You must know that you can speak freely with us.
None of us could hear the eagle warriors either, I said. I pointed at Fila and then at Floppy. Not even those of us with really good hearing.
If you are not from this land, then you do not hear it the way we do,
Weasel Teeth said.
I mean no disrespect to your hearing, but there are certain patterns they disrupt even when they and their bison move as silently as we do on bare feet.
Then you tell it, Weasel Teeth,
said Shining Water.
Your words come from the heart.
No, I will explain.
Chief Red Squirrel held up her hand.
We always grew enough rice for our tribe, and a little more just in case we needed it. But the invaders are used to growing rice in ways that will feed the huge cities they have all year round. They made us dig trenches in the earth between the ponds, and build mounds where there weren't any before, and pull up all the bulrushes and cattails that we used to eat, and make baskets from so they could use them all for rice. They even made us build a new path for the stream that we can get our water from. The eagle warriors patrol the rice fields so that we cannot take any for ourselves, but we do not have enough water in our village to grow rice and still water ourselves and our other plants. So we do not grow it for ourselves, and we cannot take you to see it. We smuggle in the little that we eat in our clothes.
Well, that really is sad,
Emma sighed.
Not being able to eat something that was a staple of your diet in better times? I certainly know how you feel. I've got lots of recipes I thought I'd never be able to use just because my world doesn't have certain foods anymore. Chickens and eggs, for example, they'd all died out in the winter with nobody to keep them.
What is chicken?
Asked Sweetgrass. I glanced at Fila's blank face, Emma's thoughtful look, and Acrasis's tilted head. And I realized that I was the one person in our group best equipped to describe a chicken. I wasn't exactly a country boy, but I'd taken a lot of field trips to the farm over at Kensington Metro Park in my day. That made me the only person in the group who'd both seen and eaten a chicken and had the words to describe it at the time. They're like small turkeys with lame-ass little tails and spiky little red things on top of their heads, I said. And they lay eggs pretty much every day. So we have a lot of recipes that just use up the eggs before we get overrun with chickens. They're also mean little bastards who will peck the shit out of you and everyone you love if they think you're standing between them and something they can eat, including your flesh.
They originate in Indonesia,
Emma nodded.
It's nearly halfway across the world from here, so I'm not surprised that your people don't have them.
Do you mean on the other side of Turtle Island?
Little Bear asked from between Floppy's front feet.
Or the country of the invaders.
Oh, dear.
Emma glanced at me.
Dave, my love, how much ought we to tell them? What was that about the Prime Directive?
Are they from the land of the Pale Men?
Weasel Teeth asked.
Oh, they came generations ago.
Shining Waters sighed.
They came 1,000 years ago, and then 500 years ago again.
Weasel Teeth argued. She narrowed her eyes at me, then turned her gaze on Emma.
First, they came in small wooden ships to the north, in leather armor with shining metal weapons. The next time, they came in big wooden ships to the south, in shining metal armor with weapons that made a loud noise and shot little pieces of metal faster than a bow and arrow.
Then you guys already know about Europe, I said. That's the land of the Pale Men. If it makes you feel better, my family was kicked out of there because the rest of the Pale Men wanted to kill off all of my people— the way the invaders are doing to you. I don't like the Pale Invaders any more than you do.
But chickens aren't from there originally. They're from a small island full of brown people, rather like you,
Emma said. She glanced around the clearing.
Do you think they ought to have come back by now? Might something have happened to them?
What is it like in the land of the Pale Men?
Little Bear asked. In this universe? I shrugged. I don't know, to be honest. I bet they've come to the Industrial Revolution by now, but without the Revolutionary War over here, I don't know if they've managed to throw off the shackles of feudalism. It's probably a lot like living under the Sacrificers for most of the people there, with lords and emperors and mounted warriors and peasants who work the land, except that a lot of the peasants are probably working inside of big stone buildings instead of out in the fields.
Big stone buildings that fill the air with noxious smoke,
Emma added.
Imagine without Benjamin Franklin, electricity would have hardly ever been discovered. Or perhaps another genius might have stumbled across it sooner or later. I'm sure that Nikola Tesla would have had to discover it if nobody had done it yet.
Maybe they all stayed home and invented cold fusion instead of going out to take over most of the rest of the world, I said. I have no idea what it's like, honestly. In my world, this little village is a town with paved roads and places that serve food from all around the world. And I don't think we grow rice anywhere for miles around. It seems like stuff changed about 500 years ago. Did the, sacrificers fight off the pale-faced invaders?
They say that the Sun Eagle boiled the pale-faced men alive in their armor,
Chief Red Squirrel said.
The men arrived during the hottest part of the summer, and the eagle turned his eye upon them and dried out their bodies. It was easy for our invaders to club them to death or find places to stab them after that.
So they became dehydrated as a result of their heightened body temperature from the heat that was trapped in their armor,
Acrasis mused, and then she leaned over and whispered into my ear.
We become thicker and less fluid when we lose water. Is that true for humans, too?
No, we feel tired and kind of dizzy, I whispered back to her. And then we might shrivel up a little, but we don't lose much mass.
But humans are primarily composed of water,
Acrasis replied.
Would dehydration not reduce a great deal of that mass?
We get really sick if we lose even a little of that water, and we can die if we lose, like, a gallon or two, I whispered. Come on, you must have observed what happens to humans when they don't have enough water at some point. How long were you on Earth before you ate everyone anyway?
We consumed humans who showed that kind of weakness, especially if they were alone,
Acrasis whispered.
They're back!
Chief Red Squirrel pointed to the two copper figures who grew larger in the mass of green forest before us.
All is normal,
Striped Falcon reported as she skidded to a stop in front of us.
No eagle warriors or eagle lords in the village.
Nobody's even left for the rice fields yet,
Black Turtle panted as he slowed down a few yards behind her. He leaned against a tree, grabbed a small gourd that hung on his belt, and tipped the contents into his mouth.
Perfect,
Chief Red Squirrel said. She started to walk toward the village.
If a few people stay behind to help show you how we farm and build our houses, the Eagle Lord's eye will not notice.
It only took us a few minutes to get back to the village, even though we walked slowly in a group instead of sprinting the way Black Turtle and Striped Falcon had. This time, we weren't trying to get the attention of the village. The people were already in waiting for us. We stepped out of the trees into a huge cluster of women who held more flowers, more dishes of forbidden wild rice and game meat, and more soft blankets. But this time, there were no drums or other instruments. It was clear that we were still welcome, but that we had to keep things quiet today.
The spirits have spoken to me, my people!
Chief Red Squirrel stepped into the village with her hands raised in welcome, and I was glad she was taking the lead. She'd be able to put our decision into terms that would help her people accept it.
They are here to see if we are ready to take back our land and begin to live as we once did.
We're ready to fight,
a creaky old lady's voice came from the middle of the crowd.
Yes, we can see that your hearts are filled with fighting spirit.
Emma swung her fist in front of her in a mime of an uppercut punch.
But there's more than just fighting involved, you know.
We want to see how you survive here on the day-to-day, I explained. You know, show us how you farm, how you build your houses, that kind of thing. The women started to look around at each other and murmur in confusion.
This war will be long and dangerous,
Fila growled.
We need to know that you can survive with what you have when you're fighting.
Yes, resource allocation is a crucial skill,
Acrasis agreed.
I'll show the spirits how I tend to my garden,
another old lady called out.
You've all seen my garden. I grow my plants in the old way, no matter who sees them.
And I'll round up the builders so we can build a wigwam,
said a younger-sounding woman's voice from the crowd.
If we all work together, we can build one in a day.
After breakfast,
Phila said. She took a bowl from one of the women and started to gulp up the pieces of meat in it.
Even the spirits need to eat.
We shared the meat stew, bean soup, and wild rice with berries with the women. As we started to get full and the pace of our eating went down, most of the women took their leave and streamed through the village toward the north. Soon we were left with the chief, the boys, most of the women who do man things, a few of the middle-aged women, and all of the white-haired grannies.
Would you like to see my garden, spirits?
One of the white-haired grannies asked. She'd coiled her gray hair into two buns over her ears like Princess Leia, and she was covered in white linen shawls and scarves with triangular patterns along the edges. Her back was so hunched over that she nearly bent over double when she bowed to us.
I've kept it in the old ways so that we can teach our children.
Absolutely. I'd love to see your garden, I said. I scrambled up from my nest of blankets I'd settled myself on and brushed off my jeans. Emma, you brought your notebook with you, right?
Of course I did.
Emma dug her notebook out of the pocket of her jacket.
This is all so fascinating, isn't it? I rather feel like an anthropologist.
The spirits like to study people,
The old lady said. She nodded as she led us through the winding paths of the village toward her home.
I'd have thought you would know all about us by now. It's you who gave us trees to build homes and plants we can eat.
Well, the spirit world is kind of far away from the human world, I invented. We know how we taught you guys, but we don't have to do a lot of that ourselves. We can just think about something to eat, and it's there. We don't have to grow it, so we don't really have to practice that stuff on our own. We'd like to see how you've adapted what we've taught you to the situation you're in, like a test.
Auntie Gooseberry's garden really is the best in the village, said Little Bear.
He patted Floppy on the nose and giggled when the little mammoth reached over to tussle his long black hair.
Her pumpkins are so sweet. I bet Floppy will like them.
My pumpkins haven't even blossomed yet, but I'd be honored to feed the spirit bison whatever he likes,
Auntie Gooseberry said. She pointed a finger at a small wigwam that had a huge garden patch around it, then hobbled over to the plants.
See how I've organized the garden? It's in the old way, not like the invaders do in their big vegetable fields.
Why don't you tell us about how you did it? I asked.
Yes, walk us through your whole process,
Emma said. She poised her pencil above the linen pages of the notebook.
First, I plant a few kernels of corn with a fish head.
Auntie Gooseberry grabbed a stick from the ground and poked at one of the mounds of dirt that littered the garden like acne. Then she waved the end of her stick up and down the leafy green shots that sprouted from the center of each mound.
Then I pile up the dirt on top of it, nice and tall, like this.
And the fish heads are to feed the corn?
Emma asked as she scribbled in her notebook.
No, the fish heads are to feed the earth,
Auntie Gooseberry said.
The corn will grow tall no matter what, but without the fish heads, the earth will starve. You won't be able to plant anything the next year and have it grow.
The dirt is made of death,
Phila said.
It is a truth my people know.
Then we plant the beans between the corn mounds.
The old lady squatted down and patted the valley between two mounds of corn sprouts, where tiny white sprouts poked their leafy heads out of the dark dirt.
They don't look like much now, but they'll climb up the corn as they both grow.
And these are Auntie Gooseberry's pumpkins,
Little Bear pointed to the bright green vines that grew around the edge of the garden patch.
Some of them are acorn squash or butternut squash,
Auntie Gooseberry said. She bent down and showed us where the tendrils of green vines had started to curl over the ground toward the hills of corn.
They'll give shade to the bean sprouts when they're bigger and keep the weeds from taking over.
Your people use symbiosis to grow plants you need for food,
Acrasis said as she bent down and placed her hand in the dirt.
We sense that this soil is optimally balanced to grow the plants you mention.
which suggests that they remove and provide optimal nutritional balance from the dirt. Does this mean that these foods are all nutritionally balanced for humans as well?
Yes. When you eat them together, they are as nutritious as meat,
Auntie Gooseberry said. She straightened up and started to hobble toward her hut.
They're even better with wild rice. I'll get you some of our seeds.
Hey, we don't want to take from your stores, I began.
No, I have plenty to plant.
The old lady bent down in the doorway of her house, straightened up, and hobbled back to us. She held out a cupped handful of corn kernels, teardrop-shaped flat squash seeds, and oval beans in shades from dark reddish-brown to pure white.
My grandmothers worked for a long time to breed these plants to be the sweetest and best they could be, and I want the spirits to have some. It would honor all of my ancestors.
We thank you for this gift.
Fila bowed deeply to the old woman, then cupped her hands. She smiled a wide, toothy smile as the old woman poured the stream of seeds into her hands, and her yellow-green eyes began to glisten with the faintest hint of tears.
We will take the seeds of your mothers with us on our journey and nourish our children's children with them. You and your mothers will always be remembered among our people, Auntie Gooseberry.
The old lady poured the last of the seeds into Fila's hands and then clasped those hands in her wrinkled old fingers. Her dark eyes glistened with tears as well, and she bowed her head to Fila as she backed reverently away.
If we are going to show you how we build a wigwam, we should start soon,
Shining Waters said. She beckoned us toward the woods.
Some of the builders are already cutting down saplings that are the right size. We will make you a small one, and when it is finished, we will turn it into a shrine to honor the five of you.
Goodness, I've never had a shrine built to me before.
Emma clasped her hands to her heart as we followed Shining Waters toward the edge of the village.
I certainly appreciate all that your folk are doing for us. It makes a girl feel quite special.
We stopped at a bare patch at the edge of the village, where several women were hard at work sawing at the trunks of slender, shortish saplings with serrated obsidian knives, and a small pile of tall saplings was piled up in a mound of leaves.
We are almost done cutting down the trees.
Sweetgrass nodded at us as she emerged from the edge of the woods into a bare circle of dirt. She held a small wooden stake in one hand and a looped string in the other.
We use 16 young trees to build a round wigwam.
You may want to settle in for this.
Shining Waters spread more striped and tessellated blankets with bright red and yellow patterns on the ground.
Even with our fastest women on the job, it'll take most of the day.
I'm glad that you asked to stay in the village for the day,
Chief Red Squirrel whispered as we arranged ourselves on the blankets.
That way, you will be here in case the Eagle Lord or his warriors try to find you. We will protect you as you protect us.
First, we measure a circle so we can find the right place to put the 16 saplings.
Sweetgrass planted the stake into the middle of the circle of dirt, wrapped the string around the stake, and then took 7 short strides away from the stake. She dug another stick into the ground, then traced a thick line in the dirt with it as she walked around the stake in a perfect circle. Once she was finished with the circle, she dug a small round hole in the ground on the edge of the circle. She walked to the other side of the circle, dug another hole right across from the first one, then walked back along the circle and dug another hole directly between them at a 90-degree angle. Her practiced feet, hands, and eyes went back and forth along the perimeter of the circle until she had dug 16 holes in perfect proportion to each other. Sweetwater nodded at us and then beckoned the woodcutters over.
These should be about 6 inches deep and wide enough to hold your saplings.
The women came over with tall saplings on their shoulders. Each of them started to fit a sapling into one of the holes that Sweetgrass had dug. Once the saplings were fitted deep into the ground, the women grabbed the thin ends of the saplings and bent them over the circle. Once they'd bent the saplings into position so that they resembled a hashtag or a tic-tac-toe grid made out of wood, they used what looked like long strips of bark to lash the ends of the saplings together. They shaped the wood to create 4 arches, with 2 perpendicular to the other 2. Once they were done with the first 8 saplings, they bent the other 8 trees over in small arches perpendicular to the first 8. The building women worked until lunch and barely took breaks for water. They shared bread, succotash, and what seemed like the rest of the meat stew with us, and then went right back to building. This time they lashed hoops together out of some of the smaller saplings they'd cut and set them over the dome of the skeletal wigwam like the skirts of an old-fashioned southern belle. One of the grandmothers came over to us with a basket of long green cattail leaves, bowed to us, then sat down on the blanket and started to weave the leaves together.
"You can cover the wigwams with sheets of bark in the winter,"
Sweetgrass said.
"But in the late spring, the bark is too moist on the trees to peel it well. Granny Honeybee is faster than anyone else when it comes to cattail weaving." "Do slow down if you don't mind,"
Emma said to Granny Honeybee.
"Just for a few minutes. I'd like to see precisely what you do with your fingers."
"It's harder to do it slowly than to do it fast at my age,"
Granny Honeybee said. But she grinned and slowed down a little so that we could see the way she wove the cattails in and out of each other.
"There's one problem with those cattails."
Weasel Teeth held up a sheet of dried bark, turned around, and lifted it up onto the first hoop of the wigwam. She balanced the bark against the wigwam, patted it into place, and then stepped back to show us that the sheet of tree skin was balanced nicely against the skeleton of the wigwam.
"You have to tie the cattails onto the hoop, but you can put the bark right on without having to worry. When it gets too old, you can just switch it out."
"But you can layer the cattails in as many layers as you want,"
Granny Honeybee said. She held up the sheet of cattail fabric she'd woven, then folded it back on itself.
"I suppose the bark is very warm?"
Emma asked.
"And you might wish to switch out the bark and cattails when the weather turns?"
"The bark keeps in the heat when you build a fire inside,"
Sweetgrass explained.
"As long as you leave a hole in the roof so that the smoke can leave."
The women had just about finished covering the wigwam in cattail weaving and bark when more of the women started to file back into the village from the fields. They looked bent over and tired, but their eyes sparkled when they saw us, and soon a huge crowd of women and scrawny young men surrounded us.
"Have we pleased you, spirits?"
Granny Honeybee asked us as she gestured to the finished wigwam. She handed me an extra sheaf of woven cattail, bowed, and backed away.
"Do our skills meet with your approval?"
The eyes of the villagers were on us, but we couldn't just tell them to start their revolution yet. We had to wait until we wouldn't get caught up in the fight at all.